This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show, broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota studios at AM 950. Good afternoon. Hope you're doing well today. Matt Patrick here today. Brett will stop on by with an interview with Patrick Cooligan. We're going to be talking about some of their headlines they've got over there. Also, Jack Rice is going to stop on by. Not only are we going to talk on some of the legal issues that have come up, but his offices are right down the street where that shooting happened in St. Paul. I'll get his thoughts on what happened there. Patrick, how are you today, my friend?
Good.
You are going to be doing a lot better because in the bag next to you in there, I have brought the fruits of my manual labor. And quite literally, that's it. It's the fruits of my manual labor. Apples that I picked off the orchard. I've got so many at home. I decided to bring some in for you and for Brett here. Do you like apples?
I like apples. Thank you very much for bringing those in.
There you go. You can enjoy. Those are either Sweet Tango or Honeycrisp. And yeah, that's it's as good as it gets, just, you know, right off the tree. I really do love apple picking. Although now I got those at Loose Line Orchard out in Watertown. That's a kind of a becoming a more popular orchard there. That orchard, if I'm not mistaken, is basically, I think they're out of apples now. I mean, the last I checked last week, and my son wanted to go on out with his girlfriend to an orchard, and I called up, and they said, well, we've got probably picking today and tomorrow. This is on this last Saturday. Today and tomorrow, and that's going to be it. If you want to pick apples into mid to late October now, you really have to go out. I mean, you got to go out, usually. I think about 2 hours out of the metro area to find an orchard that still's got, you know, apples, because it's becoming, I don't even try like the ones around Lake Minnetonka. Like, what is it, Minnetonka Orchards over there? I don't even try to go over there. That orchard's already picked out. Plus, it's really pricey there. It's really pricey. But if you go out a little bit, it's remarkable. They're really busy, and people love apple orchards, especially in the fall. So one of my favorite things to do. And the trees are looking nice now. I'm going to have some photos a little bit later on of the trip to the Arboretum. Went out there on Sunday. Just gorgeous. Just simply gorgeous. And I got some nice photos from out there. I'll get those posted up a little bit later on. One thing I did not see when I was out at the Arboretum or at the Apple Orchard was an Eurasian eagle owl. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but there is one running loose now in the metro area. The Minnesota Zoo searching its grounds and asking for the public's help to find one of its owls that flew the coop. Zoo officials say a Eurasian eagle owl named Gladys flew off into a tree during a routine exercise and training session in October. Staff have been tracking around the zoo's heavily forested grounds. Think she's probably still there. However, the zoo is asking for the public's help in keeping a keen eye for the large missing fowl. In a post on the zoo's social media account, staff say Gladys doesn't pose a threat to public safety. Oh, no, sure. Everyone would love to have a Eurasian eagle owl. You know, just perch right next to them. I'm sure that's it. We would love that. The zoo is working with local wildlife authorities to find her. I hope they do find her. I don't think anything. Do you think anything would be a danger to it? I don't think an eagle would mess with it. It's pretty big. Eagles generally don't do that. Hawk, maybe? I don't know. I don't think a hawk. I mean, it'd have to be unlucky to have a run. Owls are pretty. They're pretty. You know, they can take care of themselves. I don't think there's much that eats an owl. I don't even think. Did humans ever eat? What are we having for dinner tonight? Owl stew. Yum. Who doesn't love a little owl stew? Delicious. I don't think even humans touched them that much. We don't have gators. Bears wouldn't eat them. Imagine a wolf would get them or a coyote, but, you know, wings, you know, I'm going to presume that that's kind of the deal breaker for those two guys. So I'm going to hope that it's okay. No one does anything to it. They find it, but I mean, still, a Eurasian eagle owl, it just sounds a little bit scarier than, I'm a little wary. It's a smidge wary. If you want to know the truth, 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It happened for the first time today to me directly. I was at a shopping mall, Eden Prairie Center. My son's birthday is coming up. I had to get a few gifts for him. And I was wearing a mask because I don't want everyone else to die because I'm just a selfish little jackass. So I wear it, and I'm just walking through it, and a guy comes up to me and says, "Hey, pardon me a second, why are you wearing that?" Now, he wasn't mean. He wasn't yelling. He was just asking. But still, I said, "Well, because it's a pandemic going on, and I don't want everyone to get sick." And I did also add, I said, you know, I recently went through a health crisis, and because of that, I'm being a little more cautious because I had a really serious run-in on my health early this year. And the guy goes, oh, okay. Like, that was okay. You know, like, that was it. I mean, the guy walked away. But the fact that he actually challenged me, why am I wearing a mask? And to be blunt, I got to tell you, I'm a little bit amazed lately. I've gone to some gas stations. I've gone to some grocery stores. I've gone to some shopping centers. And there are a lot of people not wearing masks right now. There's a lot of people. I mean, it reminds me a lot of when I did that trip down to South Carolina. And we'd go into the grocery store, going like a Piggly Wiggly down there. We'd be the only ones wearing a mask. It blew my mind. I'm like, okay, you guys understand pandemics, right? And, you know, you go into a gas station, we're the only ones wearing a mask. And, yeah, here, you know, now Minnesota's always been good, but now I'm starting to see it more often. And like I said, the guy wasn't mean. He wasn't insulted. He says, why are you wearing that? And I answered, but is this where you're really at? I mean, is this what your life has become? You know, that you're basically strolling the mall. I'm going to presume you had a purpose to be there. And it wasn't just to basically find people that were wearing masks and challenging them. But come on, man. You can't be that. You can't be that. You really can't. I mean, I don't know what's going on in your life that you're trying to lash out at this, but what I find to be funny about it is the argument that people make about not wearing masks is that it's about freedom. But yet you are hearing people challenge people wearing masks. Like, how dare you wear one around me, even under their guise, under their argument, that individual should have the freedom to do so. And I think that kind of tells you a lot. They're trying to argue freedom to not wear a mask, but yet the same element of our society that's trying to make that argument is challenging people when they are wearing a mask. And I'm like, okay, you guys don't see the bipolar nature of this? Two opposite sides of the scale here. Like I said, I don't know what your life is like, dude, where that's what your existence is, where you're basically running around a shopping mall in the middle of a weekday challenging people that have a mask on. But I swear to God, I hope that you actually had some other purpose there, that's not exactly what you were doing there. But like I said, I mean, was he mean? I mean, I think it was a little out of line to ask the question, but he wasn't yelling. He wasn't screaming. He wasn't like a howler monkey showing up to these school board meetings. He just asked. And I think, you know, and the fact that I did tell him, yeah, well, I had a health condition earlier this year. That was pretty scary. You know, that, you know, I'm still a little wary of that. That's why I'm wearing the mask. I think, oh, okay. Well, then you're okay. That's kind of the mentality I took from it. Well, I'll tolerate yours. But I'm on the lookout. Oh, thank God. Thank God you're here. Thank God. Go try the kitchen store. Let's see. You can go tackle Gladys over there and see if you're going to be able to wring her mask off her face. 952-946-6205. Let's go into the coronavirus update since I'm on it already here. Tuesday's COVID-19 numbers include 7,942 cases, 10 newly reported deaths. Now, let me stop you before you. What? It's bad. Don't get me wrong. Those aren't good numbers. See, even if you break it into three. But those numbers are the Saturday, Sunday, and Monday numbers. 7,942. All right. 10 deaths. The state death toll now is 8,330 since the start of the pandemic. As of October 10th, the state reported that 3,429,066 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 3,260,319 people have completed the vaccine series. The state has now started to report the booster shot numbers. 190,415 third doses booster shots have been administered. For context, the most ICU COVID patients at one time during the overall spring surge was 202. Let's see here. 202, the most non-ICU patients was 517. Overall, the current level of people with COVID-19 admission to hospitals is on par with the state surge that was dealing with the mid to late October, which is the tail end of the fall surge. So the numbers there are you know, fairly stark in regards to the amount of people that are in the hospital. As a matter of fact, let me pull that up here. Currently, it's 960. 960, up from 915 on Monday, 254 people in intensive care, 706 in general hospital care. Once again, the numbers from spring surge, 254 versus 202 was the number in spring. Non-ICU patients was 517. It's 706 now. Thanks, idiots who are not getting vaccinated. The 7,942 positive results in Tuesday's update were from 93,926 completed tests, creating a test positivity rate of 8.45. According to John Hopkins University of Minnesota's test positivity rate over the past 7 days is 9.10%. Still pretty high. While unvaccinated people from the Star Tribune, unvaccinated people make up 38% of Minnesota's population, including children 11 and younger who aren't eligible for the shots. A comparison with the breakthrough data shows that they make up about 71% of the infections identified in the past week. More than 98% of fully vaccinated Minnesotans haven't suffered infections, which is a significant... Okay, so if you get vaccinated, there's a you have a 98% chance right now of not having an infection if you get vaccinated. And if you do get the infection, it's generally a lot less severe than an unvaccinated person, and your chances of dying are substantially less than an unvaccinated person. And you can throw these numbers out there all day long, and it's like, you're lying. It goes against the real world narrative I wish existed, so I'm just going to say you're a liar and make the numbers in my head the real thing. God. Dear Lord. I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick. I don't want you bankrupt for the rest of your life. I don't want your pancreas to give out on you. I don't want you to have lifelong health problems. We talked about that on Monday, I believe. For goodness sakes, just get vaccinated, you fools. So once again, 98% of fully vaccinated Minnesotans haven't suffered any kind of infection, which is significant considering that some breakthrough cases were inevitable and that fast-spreading Delta variant in the coronavirus has emerged. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Bernie is in Northeast Minneapolis. Wanted to chime in on, he's got a mask story for us. Hey, Bernie.
Hi, Matt. Thank you for taking my call and keep on pushing that information that you just add on.
Thank you, sir.
At any rate, I was driving home from Aitken, stopped for gas at on Highway 10, filling my car with wearing a mask. A lady, roughly my age, I'm 81, walked across the island without a mask, and she says, "Well, what do you think of the state of the world?" I said, "It's been better. It's been worse." "Well, how about the Civil War coming up?"
Bernie, and where was this? Is on US 10 where exactly?
Near Royalton.
Okay. Wow.
And I said to her, I looked at her and thought of telling her various other things, but I said, "Dream on." She got the message and walked away. But my God, a civil war. I'm going to wring my hands about a civil war that happened, I don't think. At any rate, we have some real weirdos out there, as you well know.
That's, Bernie, that is the understatement of the year. I'm glad you're okay. Glad you're safe. I'm glad you stood up for yourself. But yeah, that is, this is the new thing out there. Thanks, Bernie. I appreciate the phone call. This is the new thing out there within the right, is that they're just jonesing for a civil war. And I don't think the argument they make in their mind is that, oh, we have all these guns, we'll do just fine. But what they don't realize, I mean, they're good at wetting their pants down in their mom's basement back out in rural Minnesota. But you think they're really going to storm the city and take over the state? No, that's not how it's going to work. And don't get me wrong, I have zero doubt there'll be some law enforcement, some rural law enforcement, maybe a county sheriff or two, that will try to be your battalion commander, that will lead the civil war as you start shooting liberals in your community. But your whole point's going to be to basically, I guess, barricade your town in and say, we're a free state, which it will be, no, trust me, I don't want to spoil it, but it will be a hoot when the U.S. military gets there, because they will kick your asses. They'll do it from a drone strike, isn't it, in a room in Jersey. Just like, boom, goodbye, guys. And we'll all take over all your stuff. And we'll get your money, we'll get your house, you'll get your car, you'll be traitors to America, and that's going to be that. But this is what this is their fantasy world now. This is their fantasy world. And, you know, it blows my mind that these guys are at this point, that they are embracing the idea of apocalypse, hellscapes, zombie apocalypses, civil wars. And at no point did they say, boy, my life is so bad since the Republican Party, we've been voting them in for decades, and they have not made our lives any better. As a matter of fact, they've made their lives so bad that I'm actually contemplating a civil war or a zombie apocalypse as a better option for my life than it is right now. Maybe I should stop voting Republican. You could say that, but not them. They're jonesing for the civil war. That's why, if you see the black American flag, that's a symbol of, you know, I'm ready to start shooting traitors that I've deemed to be traitors. That's where these people are at. It will be fun to watch a small percentage of this country that's got a lot of guns, don't get me wrong, start thinking they can start shooting people left and right. It will be a delight. The 10th Mountain Brigade, they'll say hi as they march over you. It will be the Navy SEAL teams. I know you like to think, well, the Navy SEALs will join it. No, they won't. No, they won't. The Rangers, no, they won't. Nope. Special Force, nope, they won't. They will be in there and taking you down pretty quick. But hey, guess what? You shot a few bottles off the fence in your backyard, so you're ready to take on the 10th Mountain Corps. Good luck with that. Maybe you can put some aluminum siding on your tractor and turn it into a military-grade vehicle. Good luck with all that. No, it will be a delight. It will be a delight. But this is the fantasy these people are living in right now, because they can't see it, but because the Republicans have made their lives so bad, they're actually thinking that this might be a better option. And at no point did they say, maybe I should get vaccinated and stop listening to the guys who are trying to take everything from me and give it to the wealthiest people. Nope, that doesn't even cross their mind. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Yeah, if your Civil War plans, basically, you haven't thought through about how you're going to take over the metro areas, because I can tell you this, they're all going to be terrified of trying to do something like that. They might try to take over Carver or Chanhassen. Good luck to you, that guys down there. But, you think they're going to go up onto the 494? Oh, God, terrified. Good luck with all that. 952, enemies foreign and domestic. Let's just remember that. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. More Wires Update when we do return. Jack Rice coming up here in just a little bit. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Yeah, okay. You know, you would think to yourself at some point, if things are going that bad for you in your life, that you're actually starting to contemplate, it's going to be a civil war. And by the way, what they're, I don't think they really understand what they're talking about. I mean, it's not like the South versus the North, where most of the people that were fighting for the Confederacy didn't have to start shooting their neighbors. But that's what these people are actually starting to, we're going to just open fire. If I see a Biden flag, then you're an enemy of the state. I'm going to shoot you. And then, of course, that's going to be the person that's going to be, when they go to jail, they're in their courtrooms like, I was mistaken by Donald's evil perceptions of reality. I'm really a good person when I open fire on my neighbors. And then, of course, they'll call it a grand injustice because that person got sentenced to 20 years in jail. Yeah. But you will. Good luck. And all your stuff will be forfeited. Delicious. It will be a surprise. I'll let you guys figure out. It's good luck with all that. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I got to give Care 11 credit. They actually do a nice little Q&A session every once in a while when it gets to COVID. I think it's very important, and the callers, nice comments about the information we put about COVID. I just don't think a lot of people are talking about it still. I think it's very important to keep talking about it, especially when you see these numbers still going out of control here, and there's still a lot of belligerent idiots that just are unvaccinated that are they're the real problem here. Question, if you get a booster COVID vaccination, do you still need a flu shot? If so, which one should you get first? And how far between shots should you wait? Okay, interesting question. Even if you get a COVID booster vaccine, you will still need to get a flu shot, said the Minnesota State Infectious Disease Director, Chris Ayersman. Of course, Chris, friend of the show, we've had her on a few times. The reason you need to get both a flu shot and a COVID shot or a COVID booster is that they are very different diseases. And when it comes to timing out the COVID shot and the flu shot, Ayersman says you can receive both shots on the same day during the same appointment. There's no need to wait. The recommendation is that, and I had my flu shot and a shingle shot. I got my shingle shot. I got both of those on the same day. You can do two shots in one day. God, remember when if you have kids, do you remember some of those days you take them into the doctor and they get like five shots? Oh, rough days for the kids, but you know. That's what that's why you have a healthy kids. That's why I don't have to. We are not burying 3 and 4 year olds on the basis like we used to back in the 1910s and 1920s. But still, yeah, you can get multiple shots at the same time. The recommendation is that they can be given simultaneously. It's not a problem to get both of these vaccines, and there are some clinics will offer them during the same visit at the same time. Question: is Vitamin Institute to masks? Vitamin D may help your body in the healing process, but it's not a substitute for wearing a mask. A mask actually serves as a physical barrier, Ayersman explains. Ayersman says masks catch water droplets that spray out of when you breathe or talk before they can reach someone else and possibly infect them. Vitamin D won't stop those water droplets. Okay. So, and don't get me wrong, vitamin D, I take vitamin D on a regular basis. It's a good additive, but it has nothing to do with COVID or anything there. It's just something I took well before COVID. Is it true? Question. And here's where Ayersman she earns her paycheck when you have to deal with the conspiracy theory people that do ask the question. Is it true the vaccine wipes out natural immunity antibody cells? Answer, no, that is not accurate, Ayersman said. If a person has a COVID disease and then gets vaccinated, it's more likely they'll get a greater robust boost in their immunity. Question, can you get leukemia after receiving a COVID vaccine? Are more cases of leukemia showing up due to COVID? Ayersman says, no, there is no truth to this online rumor. There are 8 safety monitoring systems in place for COVID-19 vaccines, and there has been no unusual rise in leukemia cases detected from those 8 monitoring services. So there you go. Some good questions. I mean, hey, I guess, you know, it's nice that Ayersman is taking time, especially when it comes to the conspiracy theory stuff. I think it's nice that she's taking some time. But the reality is this is, yeah, some of the stuff is kind of funny. But hey, you know, she takes it seriously and she answers it seriously. She's a better human being than I am. 952-946-6205. Jack Rice, when we do come on back, we'll talk about the shooting in St. Paul, as well as some legal maneuvers that have happened in the last few days. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Jack Rice is our legal expert. He joins the show on a regular basis to talk about law matters. Jack Rice Defense is the law firm, jackricelaw.com. That's jackricelaw.com. But he's joining us to begin with today to talk about the story of the shooting in St. Paul at the 7th Street Truck Park, which, Jack, if I'm not mistaken, that was right down from your office, correct?
Yeah, that's right. It wasn't very far away. It's always strange because, I mean, for people who know 7th, it's just down the street from Xcel Energy, really across the street from Casetas, right? I mean, people know where this is. This is an area where people are walking around. So it's so strange and really surreal when you realize, yeah, we pass it all the time.
And I'm presuming you and members of your office, your staff, and your clients, you've actually been in there, or you've been like, as you said, and many of the businesses right next door to it. Where once again, as you talk about gunfire, it's kind of one of those things. Just in the vicinity is dangerous enough.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, here's an example of the way this works. Anytime you have something like this happen, you cordon off the entire block, really, and that's what the St. Paul Police Department did. And one of the first things you start doing is you're looking for gun fragments. So you're looking inside that building, yes, but they're also finding those embedded in other cars and in walls that are surrounding the neighborhood because, let's face it, you fire a round off, a lot of those may end up through windows, they may be going through walls, and they end up in the street. I mean, hence this young woman who was killed, she was actually killed not inside, apparently, but potentially outside on the street. It's a perfect example.
From the information we've gotten so far about the shooters, it sounds like there was some sort of dispute over girls. And once again, we've talked about the dangers of guns and how they, this notion of a good guy with a gun is garbage because the second they all of a sudden decide to start opening fire on each other in a crowded bar, that, there is no person that would even kind of comprehend that should have a gun, let alone could be labeled the good guy with the gun. And yet that's exactly what sounds like happened. Two idiots who decided to solve a contest over girls by shooting at each other wildly in an open in a crowded room.
It's funny when you think of it that way. As I was looking at the facts behind this and what's starting to come out in the press, what it really reminded me of is, remember that shooting in Aurora, Colorado?
Yeah.
Where that happened. And I remember, because I was on the air at the time, and I had people calling and saying, see, this is why you need to arm people so they can shoot back. And I remember thinking to myself, first of all, just shaking my head so many times, just contemplating what that means. The problem that you have in a situation like this is, even if, and again, this is a big question, is if you have one person who is doing the offensive shooting, a defensive shooting person can kill just as many or more people, even if they feel wronged. Especially when you're in a crowded room, you can't control where these gunshots go. You can't control where you're aiming sometimes. And most of the time, nobody is trained to handle a situation like this. And it's the perfect example where, whether or not you think you're the good guy, whether you think you're the bad guy, and then, by the way, you put semi-automatic weapons with lots and lots of rounds in them, look what you can do.
I was in the military. You of course know a lot about our intelligence service, our military forces that work on intelligence. Yeah, you and I both have had experience. These are weapons that are designed to kill other human beings, and they do them very efficiently.
Well, there's no question about this. I mean, I'm a former CIA case officer, right? And as a case officer, I spent months and months and months and months and months working with firearms. I could put these things together and take them apart in the dark, and we would be firing thousands and thousands of rounds a day. And so as a result of that, this is something that we just know. But I can tell you, you point a weapon at somebody, you're doing it for one reason. You're not going to threaten them with it.
No.
You're going to kill them.
Yes.
That's the point of it. And so when you have something like this happen, this is what is foreseeable. And that's what makes this so particularly brutal.
I want to bring up a legal question for you, because there was an interesting element to this shooting. The day before, Sheriff Fletcher, doing a YouTube live stream, drove past the 7th Street truck park and made the comment, oh, there's going to be a shooting there. And I mean, you just kind of, it's going to be a matter of time before that does happen. And he did this the day before. And part of me wonders if I was in the shooting the next night, if you have the sheriff, I mean, once again, this is a person who is the sheriff, who has the ability to station deputies in certain places if they feel there's danger, or at least contact the St. Paul police and say, hey, you probably need to get some people over there, as that looks like it's going to be a tough area. Is there any culpability in the fact that if he didn't follow through after making that comment on the live stream, didn't try to get a deputy stationed out there, or didn't contact St. Paul police, is there any culpability to the sheriff's office that they could have done more in that case?
You know, it's a great question. I mean, I think about it like this. I've been, as a former prosecutor, but as a defense attorney, I've handled cases all over the cities and across Minnesota. And I can tell you there are a dozen, bars that I know, because I've had clients who are charged out of those bars again and again and again and again. And so the problem is that if you talk to police officers and you know, and they know that beat, they're the very officers who will say, that's where people get shot. That's where people get robbed. That's where people get mugged. That's where people get assaulted. I mean, they know this because it happens again and again and again. And so there is one example. Do I think he has culpability? It would probably be difficult. I mean, there may be somebody who really tries, but I think realistically, what you're more likely seeing is somebody who will say, there's a history here. This happens. This is foreseeable.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, you brought up another element of this shooting, which is very interesting, is in St. Paul, there are some neighborhoods where crimes like this generally have not happened. I think this is one of the reasons why this has shaken not only St. Paul, but the entire city a little bit is, yeah, as you said, right outside the XL Energy Center, right across the street from Casetas. This is a place that I've gone down to. I go to at least five or six times a year. And it really is. This shatters the mentality that there's any place that's really safe from this kind of violence.
No, I think you're right. I mean, if you look at one of the issues that's been going on, frankly, in Minneapolis, I mean, we saw this where there was a lot of crime downtown, a lot of carjackings downtown, some muggings downtown, some shootings downtown. And what you saw from the Minneapolis Police Department and from a lot of people, and I've talked to a lot of people who live in the burbs, right? And what I've heard over and over again is, well, I'm not going downtown. And they're treating this like the Wild West. You know, we've seen this in St. Paul as well. And I'm calling from my office right now in St. Paul. And what I can tell you is you might see it on the east side. You might see it on the west side. There's certain parts of town where you might see it more. But generally speaking, you don't see it just down the street from XL. Because the fear from St. Paul's perspective is that, are we in Minneapolis now? That fear that some are seeing in Minneapolis, are you seeing it here? And if you look at the numbers, the number of people who were shot, 14 injured, one dead, is an extraordinary number when you think about it, especially in a place like St. Paul, a block from XL Energy Center.
To a point a little reminiscent, I remember when the individual around Halloween was killed by it sounds like gang members on Hennepin Avenue. That was out to, you know, doing the bar crawl. And of course, there's so much money that's been poured into that city to revitalize the downtown and bring people into the downtown. I mean, that case happening right about 6 in Hennepin, if I'm not mistaken, is where he disappeared. And they found him on the riverbanks. That was kind of one of those things where it's a, the city, there are, it's kind of an ugly element to a point of the city is that, oh yeah, there are places where we kind of tolerate crime, but there's some places that we generally don't. And when that does happen, it seems like they take it a lot more seriously.
Yeah. Well, there's no question about it. If you look at some of the reports that have come out on at least the two men who've been charged in this case, by the way, both, as I recall, appeared today in a Ramsey County courtroom with the LEC. In fact, I was there. But I can't really get too much into what that means, but I was there. And when you look at some of the charges or some of the potential charges, what we know is that two men who have been charged in this case, both had felony records. And as a result of that, both should never even have had weapons in the first place. So if you think about what it is they may be facing now, there's a presumptive 60-month commit, 5 years, just for possession of the weapons themselves, let alone whether or not they could be found guilty of attempted murder, whether or not they could be found guilty of second-degree murder itself. So when we're looking at the numbers here, it starts to get huge very quickly, because the way this could potentially work is that if they were convicted of this, it's not just about a concurrent sentence. There's always the potential for a consecutive sentence. Now, what that means is back to back to back to back. Mm-hmm. You serve this one, then you serve that one, then you serve the other. So in other words, you never see daylight, ever.
And I'm, of course, innocent until proven guilty. But, if that's the case, I have no problem with that in this case, for that for sure. Jack, if I've got you here, I hope you don't mind me asking you a few other legal questions that have been coming up in the news in the last few days. Is that all right?
Absolutely.
All right. Let's get, first of all, Winston Boogie Smith. I made the point when the decision came down from the Crow Wing County prosecutor, county attorney up there, to not prosecute. The first thing I said is, could you have sent this to a more racially undiverse county attorney, the Crow Wing County Brainerd area? I didn't think they were going to come on back with any charges anyway, because once again, you don't have any body cam footage. You don't have any dash cam footage. It's basically the word of the police officers versus the word of either the girlfriend or what people, have kind of learned from the autopsy. The reality is I never thought charges were going to be filed anyway, but when I saw Crow Wing County attorney, was going to make the decision on this, I came back and I said, okay, this almost feels like the setup was from the get-go, that there was never going to be anyone looking into this case.
That's what scares me most. And I think that's what really causes so much angst in some of our communities, because there is this feeling that people are gamed, that there is no chance for a fair and just outcome where we're all looking at the same sort of standards at the same time. And when you look at this, what it does is it creates and perpetuates that exact fear. And I think that is the problem. I mean, if we think about this, and what you hear is, well, we did the investigation, and the investigation determined that this undercover officer who fatally shot Winston Boogie Smith, he did exactly as he should do. The problem is that sounds like what we have heard how many times? 10 times, 100 times, 500 times over the last 100 years, where what we get is exactly that, where there just isn't the evidence and there's a conclusion based upon a statement made by a police officer, sir, independently without anything else, which is enough. That's the fear, because it has to be about equality and that it applies to all of us. The concept of Black Lives Matter really came out of the idea of saying they never did before.
It still boggles my mind. How in the world is anyone doing any police action in Minneapolis without body cameras on at this point? That one blows my mind.
There was a fight about that issue, by the way. And it's interesting, because the idea was, having body cams, is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? And you got a fight from a lot of police departments. And this was something that we saw all over the country. But what you're starting to find is that there are a lot of police departments who have actually embraced this idea. You look at like Camden, New Jersey. He's one of the police departments that actually turned things around in a very, very big way. And one of the things they said was, we want these cameras. We want people to be able to see, because objectively, if we make a decision, what we want to do is just turn it on and say, if you doubt what we did, take a look. Mm-hmm. Take a look for yourself. And there's something powerful and objective about a video camera that shows what a police officer does or does not face, because then what you get is that perception of equality and balance, which I think is something we should all be striving toward, no matter who we are.
Jack, the Derek Chauvin, and I believe this case is his appeal, his attempted appeal of his conviction. He is no longer being represented by the law firms associated with the police union. And he went out and said he wanted a public defender. Apparently the court weighed in and said, no, you can afford a lawyer, you need to get one. And then he said something he wanted, it sounded like, to represent himself. And they came back and was like, no, you really can't do that. You need to go get a lawyer. Talk a little bit about that, because it does seem as if, do they look at your financial well-being? I mean, obviously, I know he got divorced, and I'm going to guess most of his wealth ended up with his ex-wife, because that's how they shield it from the civil trials nowadays. But, I mean, they must look at him and say, well, you've got enough here from this that you can basically afford a lawyer.
Yeah. When we look at who qualifies for a public defender, who doesn't qualify, believe it or not, the standards are so shockingly low that you wouldn't believe it. So you're just about homeless. And that is really, really common. I see this. I saw this today when I was in court. And what you'll find is that somebody who has a job, somebody who has a retirement. By the way, Derek Chauvin has two retirements. And so the idea, let alone the two houses that he owned and other assets, whether he tried to hide those by giving those to his ex-wife, that in itself would be a real question of whether or not they could claw that back. But one of the things he talked about was this idea, I have these retirements, and if I have to open them up, think of the cost that's going to come from the government, how they're going to tax me. Guess what? Nobody cares. Because in a case like this, if you have assets, the government doesn't pay for your criminal defense if you can pay for it yourself. And Derek Chauvin certainly has the assets to pay for it himself.
Yeah, just sell one of your houses, dude. That's, I mean, that's what you have to do.
You know what I should also add?
Yeah.
By the way, the idea that he could represent himself, let's be clear. He has that right. Anybody who wants to represent themselves, anybody, technically has the right to do so. But I think it's very, very clear here. The stakes are so high for Derek Chauvin, not just because of his murder convictions in Minneapolis, but because the federal charges, and there's multiple sets of federal charges that he faced. And when you realize just how much time that he's facing, if this guy were to represent himself, the ramifications could be so much worse than he could contemplate at this point.
Yeah, it's something we're seeing a lot of with the January 6th insurgents. Yeah. Is they're basically trying to, you know, a lot of them are trying to represent themselves, and the courts are like, you really need to have someone with a legal degree look at what you're trying to do, because they clearly, in those cases, they don't understand the law. I don't know what Chauvin's ability is in a courtroom, but I agree with you. I mean, if you've got a lot on the table, you don't want someone who could end up jeopardizing their own defense. Because, I mean, obviously, then that could end up being a reason he gets, you know, that people are questioning the outcome of the case, correct?
Oh, my goodness. It's so true. I think when we think about people who decide they want to represent themselves, one of the problems that happens is they don't even recognize some of the statements that they make that could actually be used against them, that could be used to hurt them. And so as a result of that, the ability to put somebody on the stand and cross-examine somebody who makes these sorts of statements, you literally have the ability to pick them apart. I mean, this is something I've been doing for 25 years, right? I mean, I've been teaching lawyers all over the country, all over the world. I get somebody who's never been in a courtroom in their life except but watched it on TV, and they actually think they're smarter than anybody else. There's nothing like having a combination of arrogance and ignorance wrapped around you at the same time to open you up for something that you can't even see coming at you.
I've said this before, I'll say it again. Jack Rice, if you need a defense attorney, he is the defense attorney in the Minneapolis-St. Paul Metro to call. Jack Rice Defense, you can find it at jackricelaw.com, jackricelaw.com. That's his website. If you have questions, contact him. I imagine you're more than happy to sit down and talk with anyone.
Oh, always. Oh, I mean, I understand. I mean, sometimes you just want a confidential conversation to say, how bad is this really? You know, sometimes I just say, it's not so bad. You're going to be okay. Sometimes it's like, we need to talk more.
Jack Rice Defense, once again, jackricelaw.com. I'll put a link up for that a little bit later on. We'll spotlight this interview as well. Jack, a pleasure chatting with you. All my best to everyone down on 7th Street there as we recover from this tragedy in St. Paul, okay?
Thank you, my friend.
Take care. Jack Rice, best damn lawyer in town, hands down. We'll take a break. Come on down. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. I did not have time to chat with him about the Kim Potter. That it sounds like prosecutors there are trying to say that there is a standard punishment if she's found convicted, guilty of the crime of second degree. I think it was second degree unintentional, and the shooting up in Brooklyn Center. But they're actually saying that they're asking the court to consider actually more punishment than is allotted by the crime. So it's interesting to there. But I will say this. When I see whether it's Chauvin saying I want to try to represent myself, or I see these guys in the January 6th insurrectionists out there trying to tell judges I want to represent myself, or that the knucklehead down in Albert Lea, the one woman who is basically trying to fight the state on pandemic coronavirus stuff, and she's, you know, trying to represent herself in court. I am smart enough that if I have a plumbing problem in my house, that the dumbest thing I could do is myself just start, let me see what I can do here. I don't need to call a plumber out. Oh my God, I got water everywhere now. You know, it's kind of that kind of thing. Cars used to be a lot more simple. I remember back when I was in the military, you used to do service on Humvees. They were a pretty simplistic vehicle. But you open up the hood on a car today, it's like, okay, I'm looking at the engine of the Starship Enterprise here. I can't figure it out. I'm smart enough to take that to take it to the mechanics over at Rudy Luther Toyota. They do a fantastic job over there. They're the experts. I'm not. When it comes to a legal case, I know that a lawyer might cost you a little bit of money, but it is astounding to me there are people out there that say to themselves, I can do this law stuff. And I think maybe, you know, you watch Law and Order enough and you kind of do think to yourself for a second, oh, I can do this. You just say procedural stuff. You don't understand the paperwork. You don't understand the process. And it is amazing to me the amount of people that just think that they can do something like this because... Yeah, just because I went out back and I fixed that car that one time. Oh, you mean the car that basically screeched like a howler monkey every time you came to a stop sign? Yeah, you fix that like a gem. But yet they don't see that. They don't, you know. Then they'll scream, the system was stacked against me. Yeah. Yeah, next time get a lawyer. Hour two of the show, that's up next. AM950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Once again on your Tuesday, Brett Johnson, kind enough to join us in studio. Brett, do you like apples?
Oh, everyone loves apples, including me.
How do you like those apples I brought in?
Oh, you were just waiting all day to do that, weren't you?
Really, just really. I'm a sad man. Sweet Tango? And Honeycrisp.
Honeycrisp is probably the one I'm going for.
I don't know which one of my freaking kids got the really tiny one that's in that bag. I'm sorry about that. You shouldn't be grabbing the small apples, kids.
We'll give it to Patrick.
No, it's basically like a one-biter. it was funny because we were out at the Apple Barn for the Arboretum. So you go to the Arboretum, which is on Highway 5 out, you know, right as you cross into Victoria. On Chanhassen's way out there. Not anymore. I mean, it's all part of the metro now. Right past 41. If you go a little bit further down the road, there is the Arboretum Apple Barn, the University of Minnesota. And I've always loved the fact that you look over their apple trees on the other side of the road and they're behind barbed wire fence. Because they make so much dang money on those varieties. That used to be the University of Minnesota used to make money off of medical stuff. Now they make money off of freaking apples. And I'm not joking. They have people trying to break in there and steal, you know, swaths and, you know, saplings and stuff.
We should be kind of crediting healthy thieves, though. They're really out there stealing.
Boy, he can run fast. he's got a good pace going out there.
I mean, it beats robbing a convenience store. You know what? I'm going to go rob the apple orchard.
Before the University of Minnesota sends their legal team over here to absolutely assault the living daylights out of us, no, don't commit crimes, okay? But it will, you know, the vegan thieves are, they're a healthy lot. They're ripped, man. They're ripped. And they can run with a tree for a while. Although, where are you running to out there? I mean, it's the Arboretum. You can go through the pumpkin house out there. I guess you're going to steal an apple tree and then you're going to go hide in the pumpkin house over at the Arboretum. That is an autumn crime in Minnesota right there. Don't steal the apples. My daughter says to me in the car as we're driving over, I said, well, can I get a caramel apple? I said, sure. I said, Dad, have you ever had a candied apple? I said, yeah. Do you like them? No, they're horrible. It's a lollipop coating on top of an apple. You cut your mouth, it's crunchy. No, because then a caramel apple, you bite in to the apple, the caramel apple, you get the caramel, you get the apple. You try to bite into a candied apple, you're breaking teeth. You're calling Shamblot. You know? Yeah, you are. I mean, have you had a candied apple?
I have not had one, no.
Patrick, you had a candied apple?
No, but to be fair, you bite into a caramel apple, it doesn't break your teeth, it pulls them out.
Well, I mean, we need to talk about your dental care. Once again, I'll make a call to Shamblot for you, okay? No, if you buy, well, first of all, don't have the really cold caramel apple. Warm it up a little bit, Patrick. But you get in there, you get the apple. I still can't figure out how no one's figured out how to make a peanut butter covered apple, because that would be delicious if you can kind of figure out a peanut butter version of caramel.
Oh, leave that to the state fair people. Oh, they'll figure that out.
Deep fry it, man, right there with some bacon.
I don't know about the bacon part being added to that.
I am pro candied apple. I'm pro caramel apple. I am anti candied apple. That is what are you doing? What are you? You're just hurting that poor apple at this point. You're just hurting that apple, and me just carving up my mouth as I try to have my delicious apple. All right, to Mankato we go today. Police in Mankato used a taser on a driver who is allegedly high. When he followed a police officer.
This is a reverse chase.
Hey, stop it, man. What are you doing? Get away from me. Led police on a chase then. Maybe was he playing tag? And then rammed two squad cars. Oh, yeah, he was. In an attempt to flee. Daniel Roberts Devens, 37, of Mankato, is charged with two counts of first-degree damage to property, fleeing a police officer in a motor vehicle DWI, and obstructing the legal process in connection to an October 10th incident. I got to shuffle through my briefs here. According to the criminal complaint here, one second. There. It's coming up. There it is. According to the complaint, the officer in the Mankato Department of Public Safety spotted the odd behavior from the driver behind him on Hoffman Road at 12:48 a.m. on October 10th. The driver was later identified as Devens. The vehicle, identified as a Jeep Wrangler, attempted to pass the marked squad vehicle, but just before passing, slowed down, pulled back, and behind the officer. The Jeep followed the officer and continually sped up and nearly hit the bumper of the squad vehicle before hitting its brakes and falling behind. The officer made several turns to see if Devens was targeting his vehicle, with the complaint noting Devens continued to follow him. The officer saw the Jeep doing circles at various intersections before continuing to follow him. Wow. That is one high dude. That's not dope. That's once again, we're getting into mushrooms.
This is hallucinogen area.
This is bath salts. This is something of this.
He probably thought he was the cop, and he's I'm going to make an arrest. This guy's impersonating a cop.
I don't see Lebowski doing donuts and following a cop. That's not going to happen. At one point, Devens hopped curbs and hung out. What time is the cop going to say, "Okay, let's wrap it up"? Devens hopped curbs and hung out the window. The officer interrupted the driver's actions as potentially hostile, so he pulled over and called for help. Devens then pulled ahead of the officer's vehicle and began to reverse towards the squad car. The officer attempted to back up, but the Jeep kept coming before pulling forward. The officer began to drive to get Devens' license plate number when he saw Devens hop a curb and then get out of the Jeep. The driver approached the squad vehicle, acting erratically. Oh, bath salt. This has got to be bath salt. Meth or bath salts, one of the two. Acting erratically, or LSD. Shouting, slapping a sticker on the windshield of the vehicle. Oh, God.
Wait, of his vehicle or the cop's vehicle?
Please don't tell me that was an AM950 sticker. Oh, God. They don't like us as much as it is anyway. The driver then removed his belt and acted as though he would use it as a whip. A second officer arrived to help the first officer, who I'm guessing was just laughing his ass off at this point. At that point, Devens charged at the arriving officer's vehicle on foot and then ran to his Jeep, attempted to back into the arriving vehicle, and then drove away, the complaint states. Police pursued Devens with lights and sirens. During the pursuit, Devens stopped and started driving several times, court documents allege. The officer drove in front of the suspected vehicle in an effort to block him, but Devens attempted to drive around the squad car, turned into the curb complaint. Devens then put his vehicle into reverse, backed in the driver's side front bumper of the squad car, and then put his vehicle into drive and hit another squad car before doing a burnout. An officer pinned Devens' vehicle so they could not drive away. Charges said the officer told Devens to get out of the vehicle, to which Devens responded he'd be bringing his belt with him.
And then the cops terminated the pursuit.
An official forcefully removed Devens, and another officer used his taser on the man. Well done, officers. Devens, due to his aggressive behavior, Devens still did not comply with commands, and multiple officers were needed to arrest him. The complaint says Devens showed numerous indicators on being on drugs, you think? Specifically, meth. There, we got it. Mm-hmm. I called it meth. Including extremely erratic behavior, the results of the blood draw were not included in the criminal complaint, I guess because they were Technicolor. Devens has two prior DWI convictions for 2018. Meth. Meth, bath salts, LSD. Even shrooms wouldn't do. You wouldn't be doing that on shrooms, man.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. It's meth. Yeah.
I had shrooms last night. No, I mean, nothing. When I go out there and start slapping stickers on the windshields of police cars, that's just, this guy was, he was high as a kite, wasn't he?
Or he's just a very aggressive canvasser. I want to give you my...
Can I tell you about the platform for Dean Phillips? Oh, I'm sure Dean Phillips is loving me dragging him into this.
I just want to give you a bumper sticker. He was chasing the cop. It kind of makes sense. You know, he's just a very aggressive...
I think blue lives matter. Oh, that would be the irony of it. If he put a blue lives matter sticker on his windshield and pulled out his belt and started whipping it around.
He's threatening. I got my belt. If you're going to pull me out, but I got my belt with me.
I'm bringing my belt with me. Okay, here's a taser. Did you taser the belt too?
Giving new meaning to the term wild, wild west.
Oh, God. Oh, man, Cato. Mankato, you're still not as good as Duluth. I mean, that guy up in Duluth was, what, 70-some charges or something like that. I mean, he was going for every charge in the book, that one guy in Duluth. But Mankato coming at it strong with belt guy.
These two need to start a crime syndicate, I think.
The Legion of Gloom. Okay. Enough with this erratic behavior. Let's get more erratic behavior. Patrick Cooligan, our good friend over at The Reformer, he joins you for his usual Tuesday visit, right?
Yeah, talking about a couple of topics. One, the big one we're talking about is the city of Minneapolis still owing a bunch of money to police officers through workers' compensation. And then we have a fun little nugget in there of Scott Jensen making a cameo on a Alex Jones movie.
The witch doctor?
Yeah.
Which doctor is it going to be? The real doctor or the...
That ought to go over real well appearing on an Alex Jones documentary when it comes to the general election.
I still think he is going to win the Republican nomination too. Delicious. All right, here you go. It's Patrick Cooligan with Brett Johnson right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon as we're joined by J. Patrick Cooligan. He is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Great resource to find the latest in Minnesota news and politics over at MinnesotaReformer.com as we'll be talking through a number of stories today here in Minnesota. Patrick, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Always a pleasure, Brett.
Absolutely. So let's start off with something that Dina wrote about, and this has to do with Minneapolis basically going on an installment plan to pay workers' comp settlements. City of Minneapolis has basically agreed to so many workers' comp settlements with cops in the past year and a half that it has begun spending out the payments over 3 or 4 years instead of paying the workers all in one lump sum. So before we dive more into this, can you remind us a little bit about what the financial structure of these settlements are? Is this through insurance money, or is this something that taxpayers are eventually on the hook for?
Yeah, so our reporter, Dina Winter's, done a ton of really good reporting on this issue, and I'd encourage your listeners to take out a series of stories she's done on this. Minneapolis is self-insured, which that means is that the departments, various city departments, pay premiums into a fund, and then the city pays out once a claim is made. And... So ultimately what that means is that the taxpayers are on the hook, because it's not like there's some big insurance company that's coming in and taking care of these losses. The city's determined it's more economical to do it themselves, which is great until you have a series of kind of catastrophic events, as the city of Minneapolis has had in recent years, and especially the last 18 months.
So what's making up the bulk of these claims? What type of officers? Are these generally newer police officers, or are these veterans of many years who are leaving the force? I've been curious about this because, as I understand it, over 300 officers have left the police department since the middle of 2020 and the aftermath of the George Floyd murder protests. So who's making up the bulk of these claims that's now, of course, put Minneapolis in this very tough financial situation?
You're right. So that's 300 officers have left. The Star Tribune reported on Sunday. We had asked about this earlier in September, and they were telling us it was 200 and change, but now apparently it's up to 300 officers. And what Dina has found is that a number of officers retiring and claiming disability or claiming mid-career disabilities really exploded. And a lot of the claims are based on post-traumatic stress disorder, which has been made possible largely through a 2019 law passed at the legislature, in which if someone is determined to have suffered post-traumatic stress disorder, if they're a police officer or firefighter, there's an automatic presumption that it was work-related. And so there's some unintended consequences going on, I should think, where now a lot of officers are claiming PTSD in the wake of all the aftermath of the George Floyd murder. And so now they are making workers' comp claims, and it's really hitting the city's budget.
Yeah, and this is important to point out, and this is why we're following this, even though it might sound like, well, these are just numbers in a city. It's important because the taxpayers eventually are on the hook for this money, and certainly when we see lawsuits being filed against Minneapolis that have to do with police misconduct, or when we're talking about a number of officers leaving the profession early and getting workers' compensation, it does add up to be a lot of money. Now, specifically talking about the workers' comp claims, what exactly happens when this is filed in the city? Are these claims generally approved? Are they denied? Or do we go through like a negotiation process? Because this is certainly a lot of money, and I think it's important to kind of figure out how exactly they arrive at some of these numbers when it comes to paying police officers who are claiming PTSD when they are seeking workers' comp.
A lot of the officers have hired one specific law firm who's handling these claims, and the city will often negotiate just because it's cheaper if you cut a deal quicker. And what they're doing is, in order to improve their immediate cash situation, the city has negotiated deals to spread out the payments to these officers over 3 or 4 years instead of in a lump sum, which it certainly improves the immediate cash flow situation, but it does kind of mask budget problems later on.
Yeah, and as you said, this is really all about making sure Minneapolis does keep a good flow of cash right now, since if they were to pay these all out in a lump sum, yeah, it would really put Minneapolis in a tough position when it comes to their cash flow. We heard anything from either the city council and the mayor in terms of maybe trying to change the system or find ways to pay these comps or to pay these workers' compensation plans that maybe hits the taxpayers a little less hard, or are they looking at ways to raise revenue? What's been the response, at least from the elected official side?
So right now, I think they're just trying to cover the losses. They're shifting, the mayor in his proposed budget is shifting, I believe it's $24 million from the general fund over into the self-insurance fund. And I should note that there's another source of serious liability in the self-insurance fund, and that is from settlements. And many of them, of course, police brutality, including in the Noor case and now the Floyd case, I mean, really astronomical sums. And we can expect some more of those. And those, again, these are not, you can't just take it to the insurance company, because Minneapolis is the insurance company, if you will, and they're going to have to pay that, which means, as you said, the taxpayers are paying it.
Speaking with J. Patrick Coulican, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Website is minnesotareformer.com. Moving on to another story, this is one Ricardo Lopez has been reporting on, and that's $10 million in drought relief money for farmers that could be taking shape, but the timing is still uncertain on when we would get a special session to get that $10 million of drought relief to many of our farmers in the state. Now, Walz has proposed that $10 million, and a couple questions for you here. Where exactly does that money go, and who gets it? Because I always remember, at least nationally, when we're talking about the Farm Bill, usually you end up with corporate farmers getting a lot of that money. What do we know so far about this proposal from Governor Walz to give $10 million to farmers to help mitigate the drought we've been seeing this year?
So I think $5 million of it, by his plan, would be no-interest loans, and another $5 million would be grants. To livestock producers and specialty crop growers. I think there was a kind of an informational hearing at the legislature today, Ricardo reported on, and there was a note of skepticism injected by Representative Rick Hansen, who chairs Environment Committee and is actually he owns farmland himself. And I think he raises some legitimate questions about whether or not we're going to be giving money to farmers who can't show an actual loss. The reason they may not be able to show an actual loss would be the price of commodities has risen markedly. So lower supply doesn't necessarily mean that a farmer is losing money. And then also, of course, there's crop insurance and all kinds of federal programs to help them in cases like this drought. Farmers, of course, say, including the Farmers Union, they say absolutely farmers are suffering some tough times because of this because of the drought.
Sticking with Minnesota political news, this is something I know you wrote about in your daily newsletter this morning, and this has to do with Scott Jensen appearing on an Alex Jones documentary titled COVID Land, The Lockdown. And you made kind of a funny observation on the website where there are many ads urging viewers to buy COVID Land, The Lockdown today, as well as, well, as you can probably guess, being that it is an InfoWars website, many supplemental male vitality type pills and things like that, the stuff you would normally expect to find on InfoWars or Alex Jones. A couple questions for you here, Patrick. First, are you guys going to plan on copying that same fundraising strategy of advertising male vitality pills? And then the second question, did you actually watch that whole movie?
I know you couldn't pay me to watch the whole movie. I did watch the part with Dr. Scott Jensen, the former senator, who's kind of the leading candidate to be the Republican nominee for governor here in Minnesota. I think it's telling that they are using his authority as a doctor in something like an InfoWars video. We're not going to, we don't have advertising, on the Reformer website. And if we did, I assure you it would not be for, male vitality pills. As I said in the newsletter, we're very open to fundraising ideas.
Yeah, probably not along those lines, though, with InfoWars, although I guess with Alex Jones and how he's been deplatformed, probably about the only way that guy can still raise any money. But give you a little credit there for watching any part of that movie. I think I'd be about throwing my remote at the screen after about 2 minutes. So you were at least able to catch that part with Scott Jensen on there. And I guess on a more serious note, I mean, I wonder if this is something that could come back and bite him if he does end up being the Republican nominee. And once he heads into the general election, appearing on an Alex Jones documentary may play well in the Republican primary, but that's something that could definitely be problematic once you head into a general election.
Yeah, I think that's why a lot of people I would call mainstream Republicans are really not excited about a Jensen candidacy and about Jensen being the nominee, because he's continued to kind of flirt with anti-vaccine voices and to be kind of a COVID skeptic. And I think he's seen as not a great candidate for the top of the ticket for Republicans when they're trying to win back the legislature in the suburbs.
And final story to cover with you, and this actually is an opinion piece that was written in The Reformer today. This is from Jasmine Winter, who's talking about her experience recently having a baby. And the title of the opinion column is pretty much what you might expect when it comes to having a baby and dealing with insurance company. Title is, "Congrats on the baby, now pay up." And I think she does a good job in this opinion piece walking through the absolute mess that is, well, dealing with insurance companies after having a baby, as she details some experiences of an insurance company saying, well, back up for a second. When she was trying to appeal a claim, the insurance company sent her a letter saying that, well, you can attend our meeting by phone and appeal your claim, but they actually sent it after the mediation date had already passed. So it's been an absolute mess for her, and I think she does a good job walking us through this.
Yeah, I mean, I really would encourage your listeners to go check it out on Minnesota Reformer. It's kind of funny and wry, but also outrageous that Jasmine Winter, her experience she went through, she had a kind of high-risk pregnancy, and very late in the pregnancy got some medical attention. They ordered a test, and then later on the insurance company said, well, we're not going to pay it. And I mean, it's just one of those situations that really shines a light on kind of the absurdity of the American medical system, where she's stuck paying this bill and lots of others, trying to determine whether or not, you know, is this a bill that I really am supposed to pay? Do I have to pay? Have I been properly billed here? She says a lot of time, you know, sitting on her couch while she's breastfeeding, going through these bills. And, you know, if you wonder why people get so outraged by the American healthcare system, I think this is just a perfect encapsulation of that.
And I think even, too, what's still depressing to read about this is that she had unfortunately lost a baby during pregnancy before she had her second pregnancy. And she talked about how she was still billed for the insurance company for that cost, which, yeah, I don't know. I don't have a lot of experience, obviously, dealing with, pregnancies and insurance companies. But, yeah, that just seems very, very heartless. And, as you said, encourage everyone to go absolutely read that piece.
Yeah, and, you know, and the thing is, we hear about family values and pro-family nostrums from some in politics, but you know, they don't seem to be there for when women have a baby and the insurance company is sending them bills.
Yeah, I just about need to be a lawyer to sort through some of the things that I know Jasmine had to try to figure out when it came to her insurance bill after having her baby. So again, make sure you read that piece over at MinnesotaReformer.com. Well, we are just about out of time for today's interview, as we have been speaking with J. Patrick Coulican, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, website MinnesotaReformer.com, for the latest in Minnesota news and politics. Patrick, as always, thanks so much for the time today. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Brett.
And that'll wrap things up for our Tuesday Minnesota Reformer interview. Up next, we'll turn things back over to Matt McNeil.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. One of the things I think it kind of is my job is when I notice something that is, you know, a double standard. And one of the things, and especially when it comes from the right in this country, we have talked about how the right, whenever there's a crime that happens in Minneapolis, and Jack kind of alluded to this a little earlier, it's like, oh, it's just a crime infested. Look at those black people in the cities, guns everywhere. It's horrible. And that's kind of the mentality they have. And I actually last week made the point, you can factor in all the gun crime, and I'm not saying the gun crime is good, and I'm not saying the lack of police doing their job in the cities is good or any of that stuff. But if you look at what's a more dangerous place to live right now, all you need to do is look at the numbers of people who are dying in outstate Minnesota with coronavirus are sick out there. It's far more dangerous in outstate Minnesota than it is in the Twin Cities, even with all this so-called crime. And once again, it's crime that gets accentuated, because the media likes to sell their news, and what sells is a narrative that is basically directed at the wealthy tertiary suburbs and further out. That's kind of what it is. Will white people get in there and get the black people back in line? I mean, that kind of narrative. And that's kind of how the news gets reported a lot nowadays. And whether it's TV or newspapers or radio, it just is disturbing on that level. But once again, it buries the lead because, you can say all these things about gun crime and bad things happening in the city. It is far more dangerous. When you look at the majority of deaths are happening in outstate Minnesota with coronavirus, it's far more dangerous out there. But there is this mentality in rural Minnesota that when something really bad happens, and rural America, I should say that for a matter, when something really bad happens, that someone really says something that's really unacceptable and out of control and stuff, that they, if it's a white person, they have to make excuses for them. The most consummate example is the idea that when he was running for election in 2016, the amount of Christians who heard him say, grab her by the P word, on that Access Hollywood bus, where he's talking about actually sexually assaulting a married woman and doing that. And all of a sudden, all these evangelicals who talked about the piety and their religious fortitude, all of a sudden were out there screaming about, hey, it's locker room talk. Who hasn't said that? And I raised my hand and said, I've never talked about raping a woman. I've never talked about sexually assaulting a woman. I don't know anyone in the locker rooms. And no, that's not how it goes. Locker room talk. I don't know what freaking locker rooms you guys are in. But I've been in a lot of locker rooms, and no, I've never heard anyone talk about, hey, let's go sexually assault her. That's not acceptable. But they still went out there and defended it, and even had Trump supporters say, I wish he would grab me by the P word. It would be great. Because they're trying to justify it like that's some sort of virtue. And like I said, it was sensationalism because they felt like it owned the libs. There is a story out, and it's a national story. It's about John Gruden, and you don't know who he is. He's a football coach with the Las Vegas Raiders. Yeah, they're in the Raiders are in Vegas now. And he basically, there was an investigation into the Washington NFL team, and over the years they basically found all these emails, and they found a bunch from Gruden, and Gruden has, in his emails, said some horrible things. Now, immediately, without knowing what's in these emails, far-right America is like, oh, well, he didn't say anything. This is just how guys talk. I bet every coach talks like this. He's just getting caught and you're being upset. And the reality is no. I want to read a little bit about the story about Gruden here. He casually and frequently unleashed misogynistic and homophobic language over several years to denigrate people around the game and mock some of the league's momentous changes. He denounced the emergence of women as referees, the drafting of a gay player, and the tolerance of players protesting during the playing of the national anthem, according to the emails reviewed by the Times. Gruden called the league's commissioner, Roger Goodell, a F-word and a clueless anti-football P-word, and said that Goodell should not have pressured Jeff Fisher, then the coach of the Rams, to draft the Q word in reference to Michael Sam, the gay player chosen by the team in 2014. In numerous emails during seven-year period during the early 2018, Gruden criticized Goodell in the league for trying to reduce concussions and said that Eric Reed, the player who had demonstrated during the playing of the national anthem, should be fired. There were similar 2012 attacks on then-President Obama and the vice president at that point, Joe Biden, the current president of the United States. And of course, immediately, and my guess is that a lot of people, this is clear the guy shouldn't be in charge of basically the water table at an NFL sideline, let alone a team, if he's got such really horrific mentality. I mean, He's openly, it's okay, you can disagree with a woman being a referee. He actually went to the next step to actually say, isn't this the worst thing ever? In emails. It's one thing to say, I don't think that they should be drafting a gay person. I'm not validating either one of those mentalities, but you can have that feeling in your mind. It's another thing to then go out there and actually start emailing people about, we should be railing against gays. I mean, it's truly horrible stuff. But of course, who are the Republicans? They're out there. Oh, this is no big deal. This is just how people talk. Well, frankly, if any coach is talking like this, they should be fired. Not, you know, if they have legitimate complaints about Obama or Joe Biden, that's one thing. But if it's racist or it's misogynistic or it's homophobic, these are not acceptable things. You just don't just say, oh, well, that's no big deal. But Barack Obama bending over what they determined was too deeply. Remember that? All of a sudden, the same people who rushed to John Gruden's defense say he didn't do anything wrong, or were back then saying, Obama has surrendered the United States. I can't believe it. You know, they just talk about their outrage meters. It's not enough to be outraged just alone about stuff that Obama does. It's the fact that when someone does something that's truly atrocious, they have to defend it. And, you know, granted, I mean, this is one of the reasons why Trump resonated with these people. When Trump was out there talking about there are good people within the Nazis and the KKK here in Charlottesville, I'm paraphrasing, but not too much. When he says they're good people, he's talking to these people. He's like, yeah, these are good people. You know, they're virtuous by their hate. You see, this is part of the problem that you get, is that when you get into Republican areas, stuff like this is not vilified. It's allowed to be, honored. He just was sharing his opinion. He went on some misogynistic and homophobic and, by the sounds of it, a little bit of racist rants, and just sounds like it was an absolute jerk. Just an absolute jerk. And he should not be defended. But yet, here they are. Because it's not about actually defending him. It's basically about just saying something to try to upset the libs. And they don't even realize what they're defending anymore. And that was why it was so bizarre back. I mean, I hadn't figured this out back in 2016 when Republican Christians, when evangelical Christians were out there screaming, like, isn't Trump great for saying he wants to sexually assault that married woman? And you're like, what? They weren't saying it because it was religious. They weren't saying it because they believed it was great. They just said it because they heard liberals getting upset by it. They're like, oh, we're owning the libs. Isn't that the greatest thing? Because that's what motivates them. But it's this downplaying. When you get into the rural parts of this country and rural parts of the state, it's downplaying that kind of language and that kind of behavior as just, oh, that's nothing. But all of a sudden, a black guy shoots someone in Minneapolis, and all of a sudden, when is someone going to do something about that? Now, I'm not going to necessarily compare emails to a shooting, but at the same time, I'm not expecting people who might condemn a shooting happening in Minneapolis to go on out there and defend that kind of atrocious behavior. That is the mystery here. And I know that in their minds, they're coming up with 1,000 different justifications that John Gruden was really an innocent victim. But this is part of the problem with rural America right now, is that they're defending the indefensible. Let's look at coronavirus. I'm saying, what am I saying? What is the controversial stance I've had? I don't want you sick, I don't want you dead, and I don't want you bankrupt for the rest of your life. And now I can add, and I don't want you to have lifelong health problems because of COVID. I can honestly say those things. What is so freaking controversial? But I say that and someone says, I hate you. I'm going to not get vaccinated and I don't care. And you're like, wow. Do you even hear the belligerence? Do you even hear, you know, the same people that claim that, you know, I'm a good Christian. Well, I don't want you dead. How
dare you say you don't want me dead? I'll show you. And you're like, what?
It's this double standard where no matter what happens, if it's perceived to be the left, that it's, oh, that's horrible, it's wrong, it should be condemned 1,000 ways from Sunday. But if it's something on the right, we have to defend it to all costs. I have gotten multiple comments from rightos in regards to the Proctor story. The coach of the Northern Minnesota High School football team has resigned. This is amid the criminal investigation into a sexual assault between players, which led to the cancellation of the team's season. Proctor Public School Superintendent John Engelking says the school board has accepted the resignation of Proctor High School football coach Derek Parendo Monday night. He's stepping down from all his positions in the district and will be on paid personal leave for the rest of the school year. Several Proctor students told WCCO last week that the two players held down another teammate while a third used an item to sodomize him. Photos and videos of the assault were then spread via Snapchat. Students say all the players involved have not been in class since the incident came to the attention of school leaders. A spokesperson for the St. Louis County Attorney's Office said last week that the police investigation is still underway and no criminal charges have been filed. Proctor's police department, school board, and superintendent have not revealed any information about the investigation, citing privacy laws. A lot of stories on this, on the Proctor event, will not refer to what allegedly happened. But once again, WCCO has been talking to some of the students, and this is the story that's being put forward. This is truly horrible. But I've actually had people say, why are you harassing those kids? Why are you even talking about it? Why are you, so some high school kids got a little bit out of control. So some high school kids made some, you know, there was a little bit of a hazing incident. So what's the big deal? What's the big deal? They sexually assaulted someone on camera and sent it around on social media. The interesting thing is, part of the reason why people still defend this sort of thing is because 30, 40 years ago, when this sort of thing happened, it was a rug. I'm not saying people said, oh, this is a great thing. But if it all of a sudden came to light that there was a hazing incident where someone was being sexually assaulted with a foreign object while two football players or two athletes held him down, what would happen is there might be some detention. But there wouldn't even be a court case. I mean, if there was, they probably, let's face it, the kid was asking for it. I don't believe we should ruin these student athletes' careers or their lives. I'm going to throw out the case. We're not going to charge anyone. I mean, that was kind of the mentality back then. And that was wrong. That was wrong because this is sexual assault. It's not bullying. It's not some Archie Comics version of high school shenanigans. No, it's sexual assault. And the thing which is wild is that it almost seems as if the reason why charges haven't been filed, the reason why this case hasn't dropped, is it almost feels like the people behind it are trying desperately to find some way to sweep this back under the rug. And the problem that they have is it was shared on Snapchat. People saw it. It's out there. And so you can't just cover up this sexual assault. And someone needs to go to freaking jail. And not only the kid that did it, not only the kid that held them down, not only the people that took the video and shared the video, all of them should go to jail. But probably the coaches that knew that this event was going on, and don't give me this crap about, we had no idea. Of course you knew this was going on. Because I can tell you this, stuff like this doesn't just happen out of the blue. But yet, I still, you heard the John Gruden quotes. People are defending him. You hear what happened here. And people, come on, man, it's just some kids. So slap them on the wrist. Why are we even talking about this? There's one other story that came on up. really cemented this for me because this is a new story, and I don't know what kind of response I'm going to get from this, but I can already kind of predict where I'm going to get, where it's going to come from. A man is in jail facing criminal charges for allegedly supplying alcohol to a minor after a 19-year-old died in an ATV crash. The fatal crash happened about 12:30 p.m. Saturday on East Steamboat Forest Road in Steamboat River Township, which is west of the city of Walker in northern Minnesota. Hubbard County Sheriff's Office was told the 19-year-old ATV driver suffered substantial injuries and CPR was carried out. Medics arrived a short time later, born unable to save the teen, who was pronounced dead at the scene. Yesterday, we had talked about how Wisconsin has 41 of the top 50 drunkest counties in the country. And I did get the inevitable message, Matt, why are you dogging on it? It's just the way of life over here. It's no big deal. So a kid has a beer. What's the big deal? Well, he's an underage minor and he shouldn't be drinking. In this case, here's a 19-year-old who's underage, was supplied alcohol by a 21-year-old, and is dead. And I already can tell you there are going to be some people out here who's like, well, you just don't get what it's like out here, Matt. People, kids have a few drinks. What's the big deal? Well, in this case, this person's dead. This person's dead because they were drinking and driving on an ATV. But it's unless we start fighting back and pushing back on these mentalities that, no, that kind of language is never acceptable. And if someone comes out and defends that, to condemn them just as hard as the individual who made the comments. Or when some child is sexually assaulted by a football team in some kind of bizarre, evil, illegal hazing incident, that no one comes out there and just say, hey, it's just some kids, that is never accepted. Or in the case where we're talking about underage drinking, once again, outstate Minnesota, outstate Wisconsin, oh, it's no big deal. Come on, Matt, you just don't get what it's like out here. No, the laws don't just change. And if you're going to sit there in your rural little palaces and criticize Minneapolis-St. Paul for all the lawbreakers there, well, then you need to look into the frickin' mirror sometimes and realize there's just as much crime out there, but you guys don't have a problem with it because the people perpetrating it are white. End of story. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Yeah. La, la, la. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. At a St. Paul Public School Board meeting on Monday night, the Board of Education reviewed a plan that would result in the closing and merging of multiple school buildings. This is not a good sign for St. Paul. Through work with the Envision SPPS plan, the school district determined that having fewer school buildings open in St. Paul would allow them to better allocate resources. More teachers can teach the core essentials of reading, writing, and math, with few specialist educators teaching science, art, social studies, world languages, accelerated learning, physical education, and health. The recommendations would begin in 2022 school year with great changes in 10 school programs, including Bruce Vento Elementary, Cherokee Heights Montessori, Galtier Community School, Hamlin Elementary School, J.J. Hill Montessori, the French Immersion School, Parkway Montessori Middle School, Phelan Lake Elementary, and Riverview West. Five sites would be closed, including Highwood Hills Elementary, John A. Johnson Elementary, Wellstone Elementary, Jackson Elementary, and Leap High School. And Obama Elementary would be temporary closure model, and the Capitol High height would be changed. According to the Envision SPPS plan, 2,949 students would be affected, around 9% of all the kids in the district. Can I bring up something I have noticed when you get into budgetary numbers with school districts, especially when you're dealing with people coming in and less people attending schools? It's a hard, because this is something I've seen in my kid's school district as well. I get you might be having a bit of an attendance issue, but you don't necessarily sweeten the pot, make a better sale about your school district by having fewer resources, fewer schools. Especially once, one of the things I've seen in my kid's school district is they have annihilated any of the advanced education programs. And so that if your kid's, you know, doing well in school and needs to take advanced classes, they basically have to leave the school district, or else because the school district's new policy is just a bunch of busy work, a bunch of handouts. That's the advanced program. And I don't know, and I understand you're trying to help out numbers on the base core, but I still think your attrition rate's going to be atrocious. We're back tomorrow. Native Roots Radio up next. Till tomorrow. See ya.
Would you let animals pick your insurance? Do you really need to experience mayhem to get the best rates?